You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. If you love true crime podcasts like I do, you are going to want to read a new book. It's called Lost Girls. It's about a woman whose true crime podcast may actually help her locate her sister, who's been missing for almost 20 years. Acclaimed author Jessica Chiarella wrote this novel, and it is filled with twists and turns, and it will, I promise, keep you on the edge of your seat. Jessica has been kind enough to join us today. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And you know what, Jessica, I should say that your last name is Chiarella. I hate when people say my name wrong. So just my correction right there.
Oh, you were super close. No problem at all.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right. So I want to know, where did you come up with the idea for this book?
You know, I am such a huge fan of true crime in general. I've listened to so many of the podcasts. I've watched so many of the series that it was really just about kind of making the decision that I wanted to try to write a thriller. The story actually came pretty easily afterwards because I had always thought that podcasting was such a good entry point because it sort of gives somebody who doesn't have any background in journalism or, you know, the criminal justice system or even law, you know, it's kind of a way into becoming an investigator themselves. So I thought, what a great perspective of somebody who has created a true crime podcast to tell her own story and the story of her own family and the loss that she's endured as sort of a point of view to follow a new case that might be connected to this old case. So that was kind of the genesis of it. And I just ran with it from there.
Well, and I have to say that I love true crime. I mean, I was reading Anne Rule true crime books when I was a kid, like sneaking them at night and right.
Yeah.
And now, you know, it's like, I love podcasts. I mean, like My Favorite Murder. I mean, right. Like love that podcast, but also ones like Crime Junkie. Right. I mean, they're so different, yeah. But talk a little bit about, you know, I think there's a whole phenomena around true crime.
Yeah. And I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out why exactly that is. And I wrote about it actually recently in an essay that I wrote for Crime Reads about what is it that particularly draws women to true crime? I mean, it's so funny that I know so many women who are just true crime junkies and yet have very strong feelings about the fact that women are more often than not the victims of violence in these shows. And you know, I think there is something, the strange phenomenon with it where we all sort of grew up, especially in the pre-internet age, for those of us who grew up in the pre-internet age, of just, you know, getting our knowledge about crime and the criminal justice system and the things that were going on in our cities and our neighborhoods and our communities, just from the evening news or the face on the milk carton or, you know, the missing child on the cover of People magazine or on supermarket tabloids covering a court case. And it's such a brief, truncated view of the real nuance of these cases. And I think that's what true crime gives back to us. It sort of examines these cases within the context of a story. It really wants to give you a deep dive into who the victim was, into who was left behind, you know, when this horrible crime happened, into the context behind the why of the investigation and things that might have been missed and, you know, leads that weren't followed. And I think that is what not only gives the viewer or the listener or the reader a sense of agency, like it's up to them to kind of figure it out, or the more important thing is for them to form an opinion and what do they think. But also, you know, it does give, you know, a lot more context to the victims and their stories than I think we've ever seen before. So I think it does, it's oddly comforting. It's facing this fear in a way that has actually a tremendous amount of empathy, which is, you know, what drew me to that. And I think it's what draws a lot of people to true crime.
And I think too, you know, in the book, you even talk about how Marty, one of the main characters, and we'll talk a little bit more about her in a minute, but she, before she had this podcast, I mean, she got onto these true crime, you know, chats, right? These groups and how they would crowdsource and how it's almost these citizen crime fighters in a way. And I like the nuance that you have with the police not necessarily liking that. Yet at the same time, we know even in the real world now, these people like this have actually helped solve crimes.
Yeah. And that's been such a tremendous development that from sort of re-examining these cases, it really has become about, you know, if you can just get enough attention, particularly onto a cold case, sometimes that's enough. I mean, we saw it with Michelle McNamara's I'll Be Gone in the Dark, you know, that, you know, just the fact that these cases were getting so much attention kind of triggered the police to use this new technique that they hadn't used before, you know, with sort of using like DNA databases to try to track down familial matches to this person. And it's like these things that have never been done before. Suddenly the fact that there's a lot of attention on this case kind of spurs a little bit more activity around that case. Or, you know, one of the writers who actually helped finish her book after she so tragically passed away was a writer named Billy Jensen, and he wrote a book called Chase Darkness with Me. Yeah, that was such a good resource for this. Because he really breaks down, if you want to sort of be on the internet trying to solve these crimes, here are some of the techniques that you can use. And he actually has a section about kind of dealing with the police and, you know, the way that you could approach investigators, like you should try to ask permission. I mean, he really goes, sort of sets ethical boundaries. Whereas, you know, my main character wasn't really concerned very much with ethics
so much
throughout this book.
Yeah. Well, and Billy Jensen has a podcast now that asks for that crowdsourcing. Yeah. So it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the book itself, The Lost Girls. You have really two very strong female leads, lead voices. And the one, Marty, her sister went missing close to 20 years ago. And, you know, you feel for her, even with the poor choices that she continues to make in her life. But it's because I think you did such a good job with the nuance of the people who are left behind, right? And with her sister having gone missing, there's not an answer. And it's this searching, but also how do you actually grow your own life with this tragedy sitting right there with you?
Yeah. I mean, that was the most sort of difficult truth to face about this. And thank you. I appreciate that, you know, you think it's working in the book, because that was something that I kind of tried to work really hard to get right, which is, you know, one of the things that I found sort of over and over again, sort of in the research for this book, was that people did feel like, how can I ever move on? This question isn't answered. This, you know, like justice hasn't been done. You know, you look at the case of Serial. I mean, the same people who, you know, have been fighting, you know, in the criminal justice system to try to get that case reevaluated, you know, have been doing it for over, you know, for decades now. And so it's amazing to see the way that the resilience of people to continue trying to charge forward. But I think there is another side of that, which is what Marty experiences, where she feels like she's sort of perpetually in this state of arrested development because she doesn't think that she can move forward. And there's a part of her that doesn't want to move forward until she has an answer to what has become the most fundamental question of her entire life.
And then you have Ava, who is this, you know, on the outside, very successful. She's a doctor. You know, I mean, even how you describe her in the book, I mean, with the, you know, with the fancy clothes, you know, the very, you know, in a way, expensive lifestyle. And then you find out that, you know, she contacts Marty because her brother is in prison for a murder that Ava is convinced that he did not commit. And there is this connection that you have between Ava and Marty, because they both, you know, say, I'm trying to find it in the book right now, but Ava has this line where she basically says, I don't feel like I can move forward in my life until he can too, you know, until she has real answers in regards to her brother, because, you know, she has a husband, he wants to have children, all of this. And she's like, yeah, I can't do certain things. You know, there's, if he has to miss things, then I need to miss things. And I just thought that was so profound in the book, because you also, then it's all of a sudden, like, Marty feels a connection to her that maybe she doesn't feel with other people.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Thank you. You know, it's with Ava, you know, she sort of feels like she's gotten the dream, you know, like she comes from, you know, a very working class neighborhood. She, you know, they have a very rough family background, her and her brother. And, you know, I feel like she's sort of done the, you know, the greatest thing that she can do. She got out, she went to med school. She's got this fabulous marriage. She lives this beautiful lifestyle, you know, with a lot of money, that, you know, she feels like she can't let herself feel that she's achieved any of these things. You know, she can't let herself, you know, ignore the fact that her brother is still in prison. And I feel like for Marty, it's very similar to her feeling, which is like, you know, I didn't want to go to my, you know, high school graduation because my sister didn't get to graduate. And because my, you know, I didn't want to have a big wedding because my sister was not there. And so I do think that they are a kind of kindred spirits in this way, that they're both, you know, trying to find a way to live for themselves while also, you know, being sort of the champions for their respective siblings.
And I think one of the things that you touch on that I so appreciated in the book was that, you know, Marty talks about how she grew up affluent, right? So her sister Maggie was 16, blonde, beautiful, you know, affluent, right? And so therefore they had family that had money to continue to make sure that this case stayed in the news and didn't necessarily go cold. And you touch on in the book, you know, about how, of course, someone like Maggie is going to garner all of this attention. Yet if you happen to be someone of lesser means, someone of color, you know, that's not the case. And she wrestles with that as well, in that knowingness of why she's also been able to do what she does to try to track down what happened to her sister.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she has tremendous resources at her disposal. Her family had tremendous resources, you know, when her sister went missing, you know, initially in it. And, you know, I think that was something that felt very true to me, particularly because this is a book about Chicago, and Chicago is an incredibly segregated city. And it is a city where, you know, the stories are going to be very different depending on which neighborhood you're talking about. And that is just something, you know, that is just the reality of, you know, anyone knows who lives here, that cases get much different media attention depending on who they are about and, you know, what area they're from. And, you know, Marty's family is wealthy North Shore, and they, yeah, had all of this, you know, power to sort of drive the investigation of her sister. And now she feels like, particularly looking at the cases for, you know, the potential cases for the second season of this podcast, where she's, you know, her best friend and producer, Andrea, is really pushing to sort of use their exposure and use their new popularity to focus on cases that wouldn't have those sorts of resources and wouldn't, you know, have gotten the media attention that Marty's sister did. And I think Marty really struggles with that, because while she thinks, absolutely, you know, there are other cases that we should be focusing on, there are other lost girls, I think she also, you know, just can't let it go. She has to feel like, I've done everything that I can for my sister. So she is, you know, sort of very human in her selfishness when it comes to that.
And you mentioned Andrea. I have to say, I love her character. She adds a lightness just because she's a new mom into it. Yeah. That I think, because it's so, the book is very heavy in some ways, she adds this lightness to it. And I think you just did such a good job with that. So I just wanted to point that out. It really is. It just really adds just even more depth to the book. You know, one thing I was thinking about was, I mean, the title of the book, it's called The Lost Girls. So you have Maggie, who is lost. And then this other girl, Sarah, who is the woman who Ava's brother is convicted of having killed. You know, so I think when I started reading the book, I was like, oh, these are the lost girls, right? Sarah and Maggie, they're the lost mm-hmm. girls. As I've continued reading the book, though, I'm like, I feel like in so many ways, though, that Marty and Ava are the actual mm-hmm. lost girls.
Yeah.
Did you think about that when you were writing it? I mean, I'm assuming you must have, because it really hit me because you did such a good job, in particular with Marty, with what her life looks like, the decisions that she's made. And it's like, you're in a way almost more lost than your lost sister is.
Yeah, that was really, the kind of conclusion that I came to, particularly when trying to title the book, because it does seem on its face like, you know, this is the story of a missing sister, you know, this is a story of a murdered teenager, you know, these are, you know, yes, very obviously the lost girls, but really, I mean, it is also a story that is so steeped in survivor's guilt. And, you know, and Marty mm-hmm. is a character, and Ava is also a character, who both feel like, you know, they are searching, you know, they are the searchers mm-hmm. of this piece. And, you know, it feels like they themselves have become lost in their, you know, individual searches. And I feel like that is particularly for Marty, because she tried so hard for so long to live a normal life and to be happy and to be content. And, you know, she just can't get out of her own way in terms of just one day realizing she can't do it anymore and just completely blowing it up. You know, like that's, you know, she essentially right. just torpedoed her entire life because she realized that she couldn't, she couldn't figure out how to live normally while the question of her sister remained unanswered. And I feel like she is so lost. And so thank you. Yeah. Thank you for making that point, because that is, you know, truly the conclusion that I came to by the end of writing the book as well. Yeah.
Well, I have to say it's such a good book. I thank you so much for your time, and it's been just such a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, it's been wonderful. I so appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. The book is available now, so you can always get it at bookstores or, of course, online. And it's called The Lost Girls. A big thanks to Jessica Chiarella for writing the book, for actually sitting down and doing the work and writing the book and giving us this. So thank you so much, Jessica. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Always appreciate when you take time out of your day as well. And our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you back here tomorrow.